to one of the most recognised names and personalities in football now. He coached Man United, Aston Villa, Sheffield Wednesday, nearly coached Barcelona. His reputation was hit hard after his managerial career was over. When he was working as a TV analyst, he made a racial remark about a French footballer when he thought his microphone was switched off. I'm looking forward, actually, to talking to Ron Atkinson today. He talks about his football life and his new book, Ron Atkinson, the Manager. He's with us this morning. Ron, good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
Good morning, good morning. Nice to talk to you. Well, how do you think Man United are doing so far then under Mr. Mourinho?
Up and down. Hasn't been helped by the form of the near neighbours Man City, but he'll get it right. He will get it right. It's probably people thinking it was going to be an instant fix. Maybe, you know, it's going to be a little bit longer than people thought, but he will get it right.
What's gone wrong in that club? Did they hang on to older players for too long?
I wouldn't particularly say that. I think other teams have played catch-up. I think other teams have, like last year, for argument's sake, who could ever have envisaged Leicester? Well, they were brilliant. And one or two of the other teams have improved. Maybe to a certain extent, United, when Fergie was there, had this. Fergie was always one for buying one good player or maybe two good players after every championship. And whereas maybe they've bought a lot of players that have taken a long, long time to bed down. And sometimes, you know, you can have too many players. And that might be a problem at the moment, because I'm not sure that Jose is too sure what his best team is.
Well, surely that's his job. Why do you say that?
Well, because basically there's players there that he wouldn't know an awful lot about. They're good players. Don't get me wrong. They've got some very good players. You know, but you get people like Schneiderlin who doesn't get a look in now, you know, who was a very, very good player at Southampton and was in the French squad and so forth. People like that. Rocco has played in, and I'm talking about players that are fringe players at the moment. Rocco has played in World Cup finals. So basically, it's really a question of him finding his best formation. I really do think he needs... I think what he might be lacking is a top quality wide player.
Do you think it's time for Rooney to go?
Well, now hang on a bit. I am Rooney's biggest fan. I think Rooney's a terrific player. All right, he's maybe not playing on top of the ground at the moment. He's been shuffled about. Sometimes they played him like, particularly last season, where he played deep midfield.
It's about getting out at the right time, though. And he's not as good a player. Well, he can't be as fast as he once was, right?
Rooney has never relied on pace. He's always a strong runner. He's still got that strength. For me, Rooney should be playing somewhere near the centre-forward. Not as an out-and-out centre-forward, but in the second position. Because the one thing he can do, he can score a goal. And it wouldn't surprise me the first time. If Rooney gets a couple of goals, it might be this weekend against Leicester. You watch, he'll go off on a streak then, which is what he's done in the past. Don't forget, he only needs, I don't know how many it is, six goals or something to overtake Bobby Charlton's record. Something like that. I'm not quite sure of the number. He's also England's leading goal scorer of all time. So, you know, you've got a fella there that can score goals. Now, for me, he's spent too much time playing in deeper positions over the last two or three years.
Part of the job that you all have, and you were there, you got the T-shirt, you did it too, is manage these big names. How do you control big egos?
Well, there's a clue in the name, manager. You manage them, everybody has a different way of managing. Years ago, I'll go back to the best manager I've ever competed against, and I've competed against some great managers, but the best manager was Brian Clough. But you can't manage a football team. Nobody else could copy Cloughy. You couldn't imitate Cloughy. He was a one-off. He had his own way. Fergie had his own way.
What was your way? Did you rule with an iron fist?
I like discipline in the camp. I like players that were enthusiastic. you know, I wanted players to come in full of beans for training and all that. I never wanted to make training camps prisoner of war camps. I wanted them to come in and look forward to training. And by and large, that happened. You know, I liked it to be lively, busy.
But as more and more money has piled into the game, even after you've left, clearly, Ron, and you know, they're earning such stupid levels of money that how can they keep their feet in the ground? They're living in an artificial world, in a bubble.
Well, you've just said that, but I've just heard you earlier talking about Rory McIlroy. Rory, you know, in his quest to win £10 million. And now, Rory McIlroy may be now, where Tiger Woods was, may be the highest paid sportsman in the world, but his motivation will come from winning. All right, the others all add up. Now, my experience of all top players, the majority of top players, they have a pride in the performance, they want discipline within their clubs, and they want organisation within the clubs, yeah? You get a few wasters, but you get that in any walk of life. But I think the majority of footballers, by and large, are dedicated to improving A, themselves, and B, the club.
But what I'm trying to understand is some of these top class world footballers, and when they've got so much money that brings a certain degree of power, and when they've got the adulation of fans, you know, telling them that they're wonderful. How do you, as a manager, control that size of ego? Like, what do you do? Do you befriend them?
No.
Do you scare them? What do you do?
Everyone has a different situation. Every player is a different situation.
Who's the player who you managed who had the biggest ego?
Funnily enough, the great players, the really great players I managed, didn't particularly have big egos. They had pride and they had in their ability and whatever. Some of the biggest egos are some of the players that you think they're not particularly good anyway.
So go on. Who's the player you managed who has the biggest ego?
I think probably the biggest ego player I ever came across was a guy at Nottingham Forest, Pierre van Hooijdonk, a Dutch player. It was okay, but I remember saying to Pierre once, you know, if you were, this may sound Irish, so you'll understand this, if you were half as good a player as you think you are, I'd be twice as good as you are.
How do you respond?
I don't know. But, you know, I mean, when he wasn't the best player I've ever worked with, far from it. But you asked me who the biggest ego was, and he would have to be in the frame.
Who is the best player you've ever worked with?
Oh, by a distance, Brian Robson. By a distance. Yeah, great player. I mean, I've been lucky. I've worked with great players. McGrath, Gordon Strachan, Paolo Futre in Spain.
Norman Whiteside from here.
And I was just about to say the Norm. Norman was fabulous. A great lad. Now, you talk about egos. He probably couldn't spell the word. Norman, he was top draw, absolute top draw. And even now, you talk about Irish players. I play golf with a lot of young lads that didn't know football existed before Sky and the Premier. And when I tell them George Best was as good as Messi, they don't believe me.
He was so unlucky, Norman Whiteside, with his injury, wasn't he?
Unlucky. You know, if Norman Whiteside and everybody, if he'd have had just a shade more pace, he might have been the best player of all time.
Really?
Oh, Norman, everybody associates Norman as being ultra-competitive, ultra-aggressive, which he was. But I tell you what, he had now got a football brain on him. He got a phenomenal football brain on him.
You write in the book about Norman Whiteside, Paul McGrath were big boozers.
No, I don't. That was allegedly put against them. Let me tell you what, when Norman played for me and when Macca played for me at the Manchester United, not a problem. No problem whatsoever. I think what might have happened later on, when they both had injuries, I think they got involved in a lot of the social activities and I think that might have worked against them a little bit, but no problem. And week in and week out, they were two of our best players anyway. You know, and I said, if you've got a drink to be like that, take the rest of the boys out with you.
Different world now, isn't it? They wouldn't get away with it now. I don't mean Norman or Paul, by the way. I don't mean that. I mean, well, you know, if you're playing at that level.
Well, when you say they wouldn't get away with it, they wouldn't get away with it for the simple reason you've got people now on Twitter, you've got people on social media, you've got all sorts of phones and so forth taking pictures of lads, and whilst the rewards they get are vast, there is to a certain extent, you know, I mean, some of the great players that I knew and know of, you know, even players that didn't play for me, but with other clubs, you know, and you can include people like the Bobby Moores of the world in that. But they could always go into a bar or restaurant and have a drink, and, you know, and people wouldn't take too much notice of them. Nowadays, if somebody walks in, if Rooney walks into a pub or something, you can bet your life he's on Twitter within 15 seconds.
Yeah.
But, you know, that goes with the territory. You know, they earn big money. They're in the superstar bracket in terms of the way they're looked after. And so, therefore, they've got to be that little bit extra careful, if you like.
How well were managers looked after in your day? Were you on big money?
Decent money, yeah, at the time. I don't have a complaint with my time as a manager. I enjoyed it. Yeah, we were looked after. We were on a par with the top players there. Made sure of that.
You liked your gold, didn't you?
No, it's all a myth. It's all a myth.
How's it a myth? Come on, as a kid, I remember you with a. Do you not have a gold bracelet or gold rings or?
I had it given to me as a present by somebody.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, because the same fella gave John Bond one, and I did the fella a favour. He said, "What do you want?" I said, "One of them things. You just give Bondy." I'd be sitting in press conferences, and I'd see journalists covered in, and they'd all be talking gold. They'd be going, "Oh yeah, yeah." But no, that was all a myth. It was all a bit of fun.
And then the career—it's not easy, I guess, moving from football into the media. Lineker's done it really well, hasn't he? Commentary is what you mastered with Wronglish. You had your own way, you had your own style.
Well, yeah, because when I first went into commentating, the commentators that had sort of gone before me, there was nobody really to follow, because the lads that were doing it were just merely doing 5 minutes before half-time, 5 minutes at the end of the game. And a guy whose father was arguably, with the exception of George Best, the greatest Irish footballer, a guy named Paul Doherty, whose father was the legendary Peter Doherty, he was a top man in television, Paul, and he said, "I want you to come in and I want you to do this and do that, and if you want to infuse humour into it, I want you to be informative, and I want you to be quick, sharp," and so that's how it started, and that's how we took it on from there. And a lot of the phrases I used would be phrases that I'd used on the training ground.
What happened, Ron, over all this N-word stuff? What actually happened?
I'll put it in the book, and I've said, and I always said now, because I've gone through it enough times, I was actually angry at Chelsea throwing a result away. They should have won a semi-final, and I was sat on my own in a stadium, and I made this comment, didn't know I'd made it. Paul, Clive Tilsey sat 10 yards away from me, hadn't heard a thing. I haven't got a microphone. Microphone's about 20 yards away from me, and it's got picked up. Apparently the feed was still going out to the Middle East, and I didn't know about it for a couple of days later.
But I guess people would question why you would say it in the first place.
Say again?
I guess people would question why you would use the word.
Yeah, but people use words. You can turn around and say, "Hey, I'll murder you," in a fit of anger. Does that make you a murderer? And by the way, and this is the last thing I'm going to talk about, nobody, and I had a journalist yesterday from the old days come on to me, a fellow I hadn't spoken to for years, nobody promoted black footballers more than me.
Yeah. And so therefore, because that was the case...
Look, I've said enough on that now. I don't want to go any further.
All right, fair enough. So therefore, let's move on from that. What did it feel like trying to get back to normality from that?
Because I got back to normality. I'm resilient. I've you know, that was 14 years ago, 10 years, whatever, however ago it was. And I've done plenty of stuff since then.
Of course you have, but is it irritating that it comes up interview after interview from people like me?
Yeah, but I don't talk about it anymore.
Okay.
I'm telling you now, I've just said to somebody the other day, everything I've said is in the book. If you want to read, if you want to know about it, read the book. If not, don't ask me the question. And I'm not talking to you about it. I'm not saying you. I'm saying people.
What's the future hold for you, Ron?
I've no idea. What's the future hold for anybody? I just enjoy my life. I've got plenty going on in it. So who knows?
It's been nice to talk to you, sir. Thank
Good
you.
Lad.
Thank you very Good. Much indeed. Ron Atkinson, the manager, is the title of his new book. He wasn't going to take any other questions about that incident, was he? He certainly wasn't.